Mickey Hart here, you're listening to the GAA Hour Football Show.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
Alright, you're very welcome along to the GAA Hour Football Show brought to you by AIB. On today's show we'll talk to the two Leams, Liam Kearns and Liam McHale, ahead of their quarterfinal games, qualifier games at the weekend. And we'll throw in some analysis with Conal, Barry and our special guest this week, John Evans. John, how's it going?
How's it going, Colin? You're keeping well?
Keeping well. You're still celebrating your Woolley Award there from last year, are you?
I am indeed, yeah. I have it up on the table here, really prestigious award. That's, in fact, moved it from the table up to the first center of the fireplace.
Yeah, and how are you keeping, you know, are you missing the game? Are you looking to get back into it?
I suppose for health reasons, I was glad that I was around with my family this year, and I got involved with a club, Fossa, my son-in-law to be, and my daughter is getting married there in a few weeks' time, so up to the centre forward for Fossa, and I have a nephew playing with them, so my arm was twisted, and sure, look, I'm back at football. It's a junior team, and it's just great to be involved in football.
Any drink bans there?
No, 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 whatsoever. It's all good social occasion and we take it nice and light after.
we had just to ask you a quick question before we get into it. We had Kevin O'Donovan on the show last week. He drafted a report to improve Cork hurling, and he had on it that Cork needed a director of football and a director of hurling. You were obviously a director of football in Tipperary, you know, a post that you couldn't keep because you're also the manager of Tipperary. Do you think this is the way forward, John, where every county should have a dedicated director of football and hurling?
I think it's a good idea, yeah, Colm, that it coordinates what's to be done. And I think it instead of it being left to managers, you know, every manager that comes into a team, he'd say, yeah, my 2 or 3 year project, whereas is such and such, whereas a director of football can say, okay, I sit down with the county board and board hurling or football or whatever it is and say, look, our 5 year plan is this and I hope to implement this, this and this, and he oversees the project straight through. He's also a liaison, he's all with the county board. He's also involved with the underage, and this is where it really, really works. And I've sat down with a good few county boards over the last 8 or 9 years and sort of to show them, implement a program that can be put in place and can be carried out. And it has really, really worked. So the proof of the pudding is it does work, for particularly for underage. And you see a pathway going forward of what way you want your particular sport to go.
Yeah, Barry, it definitely makes sense on paper. I suppose affordability for a lot of counties.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think anyone in that role needs a bit of freedom as well, that they're not constrained by county board or other people, that they're able to actually fulfil their obligations and have their own ideas and be able to implement them as well. But having someone full-time in that role, I think, is definitely the way forward. I think it's a role that would evolve, you know, over the next sort of 3 to 5 or 7 years. And have a bit of flexibility in it as well, but I think it's a no-brainer for counties going forward, and I think some counties that have implemented it already have definitely seen a return on it.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a no-brainer myself. I think that it's the way forward, and instead of having managers trying to do all that kind of job when, you know, they're part-time, let's have someone full-time that's able to, you know, liaise with everybody, like John said. Just quickly before we move on, or before we move into the analysis, I want to talk about Dermot Connolly, lads. He never does interviews. It was great to see, you know, quotes from him during the week. You never really see. One thing that jumped out to me from reading his quotes, this is his 10th year playing intercounty football. He's only one All-Star. Like, okay, Barry, I'll start with you. Can you explain that to me, how Dermot Connolly only has one All-Star?
Yeah, so Dermot would have came in under Pillar there in 2007, I think was his first start in the championship against Meath in the Leinster quarter final. He, I suppose, had a lot of good and maybe bad games in the first few years of it, and it was only really 2011 that he started to put a bit of consistency behind it, you know, a couple of big games, particularly the All-Ireland quarter final against Tyrone that year. In terms of All-Stars, I think it's very competitive within the Dublin team to win an All-Star because they've so many good players up front, yeah. You know.
But Connolly's talked about as being this kind of Ferrari player, that this lad is the most gifted player in the country. You know, yeah. Players that you talk about like that don't struggle for All-Stars.
Well, possibly not. But I think a lot of it is down to, you know, that competition within it, because Paul Flynn obviously has 4 All-Stars. Bernard has, I think, 3 or 4 as well. Alan before him would have had 3. So in any given year, it's very difficult for Dublin to maybe get 4 forwards in the All-Star team. I think it was actually strange that in 2014, when he won his only All-Star, Dublin didn't win the All-Ireland, you know. Yeah. But I still think over the last number of years and the 3 All-Irelands that he's won, he's played a hugely influential role. And maybe he was sort of 7th, 8th, or 9th ranked in terms of forwards, and then he just missed out on being in that team. But you know, having an All-Star or not doesn't really show how much of a contribution that you do make. Certainly the role that he plays around the half forward line, he does a huge amount of work. I mean, if you go back to the last 10 minutes of the All-Ireland final in 2011 against Kerry, he got on so much ball and he used the ball extremely well in those conditions, and you know, managing the clock, game intelligence, game management, that type of thing. So maybe that wasn't reflected in an All-Star, but you know, you can't doubt the contribution that he has made.
I mean, for me, you talk about the competitiveness in the Dublin squad, but Jim McConnelly will be remembered probably more than even Paul Flynn. And like, you know, for me, Jim McConnelly is the best player I've ever seen. Like, he's got everything.
Tell Sean Kavanagh or Peter Hartwell.
I knew him.
Changes by the week.
Connor
McManus is out this week. So is Peter Hart. But honestly, no, but like, we're being real this week. Jim McConnelly, he's got strength, he's got power.
He has everything.
Speed.
Yeah.
I mean, he took a 45 of his left foot one time last year just for the crack, just to see. It went wide.
Yeah.
But he still had the length of it. But I think when he's not winning an All-Star, it's a problem with the All-Star system and not Jim McConnelly, because I can't for the life of me think how Donoghue Walsh last year won an All-Star and Jim McConnelly didn't. That's an outrage.
Like. Yeah. What do you think, John?
Firstly, I'd have to endorse what the lads are saying there. Dermot Connolly, I think it's like a young Kilkenny there, like, you know, he's, and Paul Flynn. Now, Paul Flynn is probably a small bit higher profile than Kieran Kilkenny, but the point I'm trying to make is that he's such a creator off of both legs, left and right. He's such a guy. I think the big thing with Dermot Connolly in the first couple of years is that he was allowing the misses, the narrow wides that he was putting in, he was allowing that to affect him, whereas now he's willing to take it on, and he's accurate, and he doesn't waste ball anymore. He's absolutely pinpoint accuracy, and he's the guy that's firing the scuds from outside. He can travel the field, he's great hands. I mean, he's everything. He's got the strength, and you know, I think he's got the composure. You know, people often wonder. I remember Dara O'Shea making a comment about him, but I remember Dara as a young man, and at 18, 19, 20, up until he was 23 years of age, he didn't blossom, because we were meeting him here in County Championship. But Dermot Connolly is the same, and good players, they come to their peak somewhere around the 25, 26, 27, 28, and he's just a massive player. He's massive. He's a wonderful player. Great balance. I think that's the, and his vision is brilliant for the inside forward. I mean, when I'm talking about, it's the ball to the body. It's the inside player gets it into his hand, two steps, and it's over the bar. You know, like a Paddy Andrews last year really caught my eye, because Paddy Andrews had the ball delivered by Connolly to him. 2 steps, no play in the ball, bang, over the bar. Bernard Brogan, 2 steps, left or right, over the bar, because the ball was delivered by Dermot Connolly, and that's his massive strength.
Yeah, and I think that's true. His deliveries are brilliant, his balance, everything that you've said is true. But like, when I look at Dermot Connolly and I look at the ability he has, and I don't want to go back to the All-Star thing again, but like, I mean, he should have more. He should be Player of the Year. He should have more All-Stars. He should be, like, you know, the Rolls-Royce player in the country. My kind of theory on it is that Jim Gavin is holding him back to a certain extent, playing him on the wing, playing him wing forward, having to chase around the Lee Keegans of this world the whole game. And because Connolly's so honest, and his, you know, his want to help his team, and his ability.
Selfless.
I have to jump in there and say to you, no, I don't agree with you there on that, is that Connolly has learned that he's part of a brilliant team, and Jim Gavin has everybody working. I mean, young Kilkenny, I thought he was going to be the next full forward and centre forward. He has him out in the wing. You know, he's working guys around the whole field using their talents. And this is where Connolly's really, really excelled. His pace and his stamina and his accuracy. So yeah. I disagree with you there that... And listen, who the hell cares about All-Stars? You know, I mean, that's a selection process. Yeah. I think the All-Ireland medal in your back pocket absolutely, is proof yeah. of what your contribution no, is.
And that's true as well. But the way I look at it, this is a fella that's scoring 2-8 in All-Ireland club finals. This is a fella who can beat a team on his own on the scoreboard. Left, right, dummy solos, brilliant balance, can turn and shoot, can do everything. And that, you know, being played on the wing and having to do that much work is not what a player of the class and the skill and the brilliance of Dermot Connolly should be doing. His workload should be kept a little bit smaller to get the best out of him, you know, we don't see enough of him as a scoring threat, I don't think.
Yeah, I agree with that to a certain degree. I mean, even if you looked at the game last Sunday, the incident with James Dolan, it was because Dermot had tracked back all the way to his own 21-yard line yeah. to put in a tackle. Now, I don't think he even was a free. He barely put a hand on him. So, ideally, you don't want Dermot Connolly 21 yards from your own goal. You want him as close to the opposition goal as possible. Going back to the Ireland semi-finals last year, yeah, I mean, Lee Keegan is such an effective player, getting forward at every opportunity. Again, you don't really want them having to track him the whole time. I think he started in the full forward for a period of time
on
that game, you know, to try and maybe expose Jerry Cafferty or someone like that, and he ended up getting a goal at the start of the game. But I think certainly you could maybe rotate him in and out that bit more, swap him with the likes of Paddy Andrews, who... it's comfortable playing, you know, at your traditional number 14 and is able to come out and link the play as well. But yeah, I think you'd probably like Dermot more on the end of attacks than sort of starting attacks.
Yeah, I mean, I'll agree with John. I mean, he's talking about those passes that he plays inside. I mean, they're like torpedoes.
Yeah.
And that isn't taken away from Jim McConnelly's game, even when he does all this work and when he is tracking back. We don't see any less of that, I don't think. And I think it's tough to take away from how Jim Gavin has his team set up when we were talking last week about this potentially being one of the best ever teams. So I honestly, if we're going to go back to the All-Star thing, I would just say that's a nonsense, and he should have more All-Stars than
he's a couple of man of the matches already in the championship this year. Doesn't he? The Leash and the Mead game, you know. So
another thing on this All-Star thing is he doesn't do interviews. And don't be mistaken to think that you don't get an All-Star, because if you answer a few questions for journalists, you're a bit media friendly. And I tell you one
thing. So then you should have got loads.
No, you need a nomination first. But no, this is the thing, and this is just like the reality of it. I try my best not to go to like the All-Stars as a journalist, because I don't like meeting players. And the reason I don't like meeting players is because you become compromised in criticising someone you've had a laugh with or you've had a beer with. You know what I mean? And you can't be as objective as what you can. And journalists are only human. And if you're ringing a fella for an interview every couple of months and he's saying no, he's a much easier to pass up for an All-Star than the fella who's giving you the interview and you're creating a bit of a bond with.
You would have had to cancel your friendship with Alan then, would you? I'm broken down through the years.
We are, John. We get a bad rap. But is there anything in that, though? Because Dermot Connolly, okay, we're saying he's only got one All-Star, but like he probably should have three, and that's a different argument as well. But because, you know, he's not that media friendly, and he doesn't, you know, he's not Paul Flynn, you know, who's has a squeaky clean reputation. I'm not saying that in a bad way or in a good way, but that's just the reality of it.
I'm not sure about that. I think sometimes players have been given All-Stars on the basis of a few years of their contribution as an intercounty player, and maybe not so on that actual particular year itself. You know, some players have maybe felt hard done by and have been gone close for a number of years, and then they said, okay, well, you know, he probably deserves one now over the course of the last 3 to 5 years as opposed to that specific year. But knowing a few of those media guys, and I'm involved actually in the All-Star Awards as well myself, from a work perspective, I doubt the guys would actually, you know, be compromised too much in it.
Come on there.
I
just said they're only human.
There's an awful lot of shoehorning that goes on as well. Like, you know, Matty Donnelly got squeezed in last year in the half forward because they needed a Tyrone man in there.
Yeah.
And Peter Canavan in his last year was thrown out centre half forward just because it was his last year. Like, I would never take anything away from Peter Canavan, but he didn't deserve an All-Star that year.
Yeah, I remember 2005, actually, I think Brian McGuigan didn't get one. I'd marked him both times in the All-Ireland quarter-final, the drawn game and the replay, and I obviously saw how good he was up close, and Peter got one that year, which is maybe soft enough, but No, I think Matty Donnelly actually would have deserved it last year. I think he was Tyrone's best player. Peter Hart was maybe close second, or Colm Kavanagh behind him. And I'm not like maybe in previous years it was a case that provincial champions would have definitely got one, or even before that, league champions would have got one. But I think that's long gone. Maybe it is a bit overly favoured towards the four All-Ireland semi-finalists, but you know, I suppose that's when the bigger matches are taking place against the best teams, the most pressure, so there is a certain amount of weight behind it.
Yeah, just to finish up, he did have a quote here saying he's a young lad coming into a dressing room with massive leaders like Kieran Whelan, Alan Brogan, Coleman Goggin, Stephen Cluxton. No mention of you, by the way. But he said he was overawed by it. Like, he left squads and had to be coaxed back in. Was he like a shy kind of young fella when he came in first?
Or? Yeah, he was very reserved. I mean, he obviously would have been friendly with the Vincent's guys, Mossy Quinn and then Ger Brennan as well. So he would have been close to them. Not too sure he would have been too friendly with a few of the other guys, you know, in the panel. He was just a new guy coming in. And yeah, it definitely took a while for him to find his feet. You know, 2010, he wasn't even on the panel. And we played Cork in the All-Ireland semi-final, lost by a point. It would have been brilliant to have him either starting or coming on. You know, he could have got us on All-Ireland that year. But, you know, in fairness, he has come good over the last 5 years.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely interesting when you see him on the field. You don't think of him as being that kind of shy fella that's overawed by anything. You know, he plays the game with such confidence. But, you know, obviously that's it. But he's more All-Stars for Dermot Connolly. That's basically what we're saying. He deserves them. The first game we're going to look at this week, lads, it's in Kingspan Breffni Park on Saturday evening. I'm delighted to say I've one of the few Laois managers that I had a good relationship with on the line, Liam Kearns. That's not to say we didn't have our arguments, Liam.
No, we had a few interesting conversations, all right, Willie, if my memory serves me right. But I know we got I got a couple of good years out of you, in fairness. So the arguments were worth it.
Yeah, exactly. The good thing about you is that if we had an argument, it was forgotten about the next day. It didn't fester on. You know, I think you treated the players kind of like grown ups, which we weren't really used to at the time.
Yeah. Well, that would be I would prefer more a partnership approach than me telling the players what to do or what they need to do. But yeah, I'd like to explain my situation with the player, and if I remember, you were well able to talk up your situation too. So we had a couple of good conversations as regards where you were coming from, where I was coming from. But ultimately, you know, it's about we getting on the same wavelength, and the players and the management on the same wavelength, and getting the job done.
Yeah, you turned into a reality TV star after managing us, so I'm not sure what that says about us.
Yeah, I don't know. I wanted to take a break out after Laois. I was scared, so I said I'd try reality TV. That's probably the way it went, I'd say. But I enjoyed Celebrity Bunny's Store. It was very different, but it was interesting. But then I wanted to get back into county after that again, and so I did a degree, and once I had that finished, I decided to go back into county, and went to Roscommon as the forwards coach last year with John Evans, and then I've taken up the Tipperary post this year.
Yeah, and you're doing really well. I want to start off asking you about the venue, Liam, because I'm reading quotes from you this week. You're not happy about the trip up to Breffni Park.
Yeah, I'm very disappointed because, I mean, it was supposed to be a neutral venue, and it just isn't a neutral venue. You know, for some of my players in South Tipperary, it would take 4.5 hours to get to Breffni Park, and for the Derry players, some of them, they would get there in an hour and a half. And so, I mean, it just isn't a neutral venue. And the other factor is that they have played in Breffni Park many times, and played as late as last Saturday. I was up there watching them against Cavan last Saturday. So to me, it's not a neutral venue, and the, you know, the idea of the fourth round qualifiers is that it's played in a neutral venue, and you know, the CCC have totally failed in that objective.
Yeah, and like, I'd have to agree with you. Maybe not on the distance travel, because Derry's a really big county as well, so I'm sure up north of Derry they have a bit of a trek too. But definitely the idea that Derry have played lots of Ulster Championship games there, and a game last week, like, you know, familiarity with the ground, in my opinion, is a massive advantage. And it's a very, very strange decision by the CCCC.
Well, I think so, because there were so many other venues around the country that would have been a far more neutral venue. And it's very hard to understand how they came. You know, I mean, we threw around a lot of venues ourselves once we knew it was neutral, and nobody came up with Breffni Park, Cavan.
Yeah.
So the first time Breffni Park, Cavan was mentioned was when we heard that this is where it was going to be.
Yeah.
So, like, that'll tell you how far off our radar Breffni Park, Cavan was, you know.
I rang Fergal McGill about it, actually, and he told me that Cavan was the Breffni Park was halfway. It was the most obvious halfway point. And he said that Parnell Park was offered to Tipperary, but she actually turned Parnell Park down.
Yeah, Parnell Park, Tipperary had bad experience in relation to Parnell Park. I think the under 21 All-Ireland final was supposed to be played in Navan last year, and it was switched at the last minute to Parnell Park, and Tipperary weren't happy with that. Again, that was before my time. Yeah. But you see, Parnell Park wasn't. What about Mullingar? What about a double bill in Galway? They ruled out Galway because they say that it's impossible to get in and out of the venue. But I mean, Tipperary don't bring huge support, neither do Derry,
yeah.
neither would Clare, and Roscommon then would be the only ones that would bring any kind of support to a double bill. I can't understand why it wasn't played there.
And if it's so difficult for traffic, why would they put a Connacht final on there?
I agree totally with you, and the Connacht final would draw an awful lot bigger crowd than the qualifiers would.
Yeah.
Now they say that there's an arts festival on there as well, but I mean, none of that works for me. And as I said, if you're not going to Galway, then there were other places: Tullamore, Mullingar. There was an awful lot of places they could have gone without Breffni Park. And as I said, Derry have played in Breffni Park many times, and as late as last Saturday, I just don't believe it's a neutral venue. And I think most people I spoke to, both North and South, have said that it's not a neutral venue and that it was a very poor decision.
Yeah, so. No, I'd have to agree with you on that. I'm reading that you're going to have to go up the night before now because of the travel involved, and that throws a whole different dynamic onto your preparation, you know, especially with a team like Tipperary, who wouldn't be used to going up to games the night before, and you know, there'd be that kind of nervous excitement and trying to be able to sleep before the game. So you have to deal with all that then.
Yeah, I mean, we are going up the night before. There's no way that we could countenance a 4-hour journey on the day to play a match. It just wouldn't allow for our best performance. So we have no choice really. We must go up on the night before.
How frustrating has it been working in a county like Tipperary, where hurling is, you know, the big dog, and everything else plays second fiddle to it?
Yeah, it is. It is tough, but I knew that going into it. But I felt that they had done so much work at underage that there were an awful lot of good players in the county, even allowing for those who played hurling. You know, I would still believe that. But certainly, losing the likes of Colin O'Riordan, we lost him to Australia. So
yeah.
I knew that before I went in, but Stephen O'Brien and Seamus Kennedy would be top-class footballers, and they went to hurling. That's three in, you know, together of what I would call three of the best young players in the country, not to mind the county. And then there was others like Barry Grogan and Paddy Codd, who were mainstays of the senior team. And without them saying it out straight, maybe they were affected by the fact that we lost so many young players. So anyway, we didn't have the two of them, and Jermal Hare would be another one who was injured. And then, as I say, when you throw in the three that went to America, you're into double figures,
yeah,
of players that are established inter-county players. You're not talking about Tyros here, you're talking about established in senior inter-county players. And that's huge for any county to deal with, not to mind, as you say, a county where hurling is top dog. But certainly, I think hurling and football can both thrive in Tipperary with the resources that are available, providing we can get the commitment that's needed.
Yeah, Seamus Kennedy is playing really well for the hurlers, but I mean, Stephen O'Brien, like one of the best up and coming midfielders in the country, like a really promising player, and he's going away to sit on the bench in Tipperary with the hurlers. Now, I know he would have had his own confidence thinking he might make the team, but why leave it?
Well, actually, Willie, I'd have to correct you. He's not actually sitting on the bench. He's only made the bench once in the whole year.
Right, so he's
been outside the 26 with the hurlers all year. So
like, that's
incredible. It is hugely frustrating for us, you know, that a player of his caliber is not doing anything in effect. Obviously, he's having a go at the hurling, and for whatever reason, he's not making the panel or the team. But from our point of view, you know, it is very frustrating to have a player of his calibre not available to us.
What's your dialogue with him been like?
He wanted to have a go at the hurling, and that's the bottom line. And, he's given this year to it, and, he's going to review it again then at the end of the year. But, they seem to think it's a long term. He was playing more football than hurling, and he wanted to give a go. What I was told was he'd have to sleep at the hurley to make it. And as I said, there's nothing we can do. We've got to let Stephen do what he wants to do, and hopefully he will come back to the football eventually. When that will be, I don't know.
I read somewhere he was saying, maybe it was when he made the commitment, that he'd review the situation, you know, mid-season, or see how it's going on. Like, has that happened, or is the door open to him, you know, if you were to get over Derry, for maybe to come back in onto your squad?
Well, the door has been open all year, and if Stephen O'Brien rang me tomorrow and said he would train with us and get involved with us, we would have him back in the morning. But I'd say that in fairness to my panel of players and to us, we've been fielding questions about Stephen all year,
yeah.
And our players have been achieving and doing really well. And I suppose at this stage, it's probably a bit disrespectful to the players who've got the results for us all year and who have who are now playing for a place in a quarter final. Like Tipperary have never been to an All Ireland quarter final. Before, so they're the first. All of them played in their first Munster final this year. They hadn't beaten Cork for 72 years. So, in fairness to the players that are there, they have done a great job for Tipperary football. And I suppose it is disrespectful to be talking about all the players who are not there and who haven't been involved this year.
Yeah, maybe you're right. You have a habit of beating Cork, Liam. You have a good record against them.
Yeah, we beat them at Limerick as well and got to Munster finals, and I suppose Limerick, we got to second in Munster there for 3 or 4 years before Cork got back on top again. But Cork, we played really well on the day, and I would say Cork were below their best. And I can't really talk for Cork, but we were delighted with the result, and we played some serious football that day. We got 3-10 from play. And 3-15 in total, so that would be an impressive attacking display, really. I was delighted with them. You know, we didn't miss any frees, and we took 90% of our scoring chances. And for underdogs to beat the top teams, as you know, Willie, you've got to do that, you know.
Yeah, I read that you said that you allowed them out to celebrate, and that you think that allowing the players out to have a drink, it creates a good bond, and you've studied the science side of the recovery side of it. What were your conclusions from the science side of it?
Well, the science side of it would be that you recover and that drink isn't involved at all. And I mean that would be the scientific side of it. And I would say that an awful lot of teams might be going that way. But from my point of view, I would believe that the psychological aspect of team bonding by celebrating a victory such as that against Cork would far outweigh the scientific benefits. That'd be my view on it. And I think, you know, for weaker, so-called weaker counties, they need to have a good spirit and a good team bonding and be able to go out and really back each other. And I think that kind of an exercise is very helpful in that. And you know, you can talk about going for team bonding sessions in army camps and all that kind of stuff, but ultimately I think socializing together is still the best way to grow team bonding and to grow the team ethic.
Yeah, we're Irish at the end of the day. We socialise over a drink in a pub, and teams are the same, and I'm completely on that side. And, you know, it's not just after a win. You're looking at counties going on drink bans for 2 and 3 months, and, you know, it just, in my opinion, it just frustrates players. Like, you know, you look at the science side of it, like what you've studied, you know, it'll be gone out of your system after a few days and you're back physically to your normal state. Is that right?
Yeah, but I would say that that you've got to pick the suitable times for it, and it's not something that can become in my view a regular thing. But it certainly, you know, 2 or 3 times in a year is beneficial in my view also.
Yeah, you've got Derry at the weekend, Liam. Obviously, it's a winnable game. You know, you're not teed up against the Mayo, you know, no disrespect to Derry. It's a game that you can actually go up to Breffni Park and have confidence that you can get a result up there.
Yeah, I think Derry have done very well. They've won 3 games. They beat Louth in their own backyard. They beat Meath coming from 8 points down in their own backyard, which I'm sure gave them a lot of confidence. And then they came from behind to beat Cavan in Breffni Park. So, they have built up serious momentum now. And I suppose they would see themselves as a traditional football county who would be better than the likes of Tipperary. But, we're going up there in the belief that we've competed with Cork, we've competed with Kerry, so we feel that we will be able to compete with Derry. And, we'll find out on Saturday whether we're good enough to get the results or not. We feel that the loss in the Munster final final. We got 3 weeks to get over it. When I was last involved in inter-county management, I was taking the Limerick team out after losing a Munster final 6 days later.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm on record as saying I feel you have no chance in that scenario. Only very few teams can deal with it. Maybe Roscommon might deal with it this weekend. We'll find out. But it's very difficult. Longford beating Monaghan was another example of it. So we've had 3 weeks. I had a week, you know, they had a fairly easy week the first week. The second week we worked hard. And this week is all about getting our heads around the opposition and who we're playing in Derry. And I think that's pretty much ideal. We won't have any excuses if we're not good enough. On Saturday we're not good enough.
Liam, best of luck. Thanks very much for taking the call.
Thanks, Woody.
Yeah, Liam Kearns there. And John, you know Liam Kearns as well as me. You brought him in as forwards coach in Roscommon. He's doing a good job down there, considering, you know, all the obstacles he's had to contend with, like he was saying there.
Yeah, I actually encouraged Liam to go for the Tipperary job because of his qualities. I thought that he's a guy that has been through the mill in Limerick. I think he's a good background of football, a good knowledge of it. And I suppose he thought when he went in that he was going to be dealing with a lot stronger panel, but he was left bereft of a few of them, and he's down a good few players. But he's done a great job, really, in producing what he's produced so far, you know. And I was impressed with them enough in Kerry, in the Kerry game. And I suppose the big thing with Liam is that you know, he instills a lot of confidence into the team, and he's, you know, I suppose the drawback he has is that he's a short hand, number one, and I suppose number two, he's up against a team that, like Derry now, that have played, they're going into their fourth game, and whereas it's a long time since Tipperary have played Kerry. And so there's a time span, number one, and number two, I think that he's just got the bear 15, 16 or 17. But still, he's got some good, very, very good players, and I think they'll give a good account of themselves.
Yeah, I think if nothing else, Barry, you know, beating Derry and getting to an All-Ireland quarter-final, if nothing else, it might entice some of these fellas back, you know, that didn't want to play with them this year.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when a couple of guys leave the panel, sometimes that can become quite infectious or contagious, and then a few more can leave. But, you know, it has been more difficult for him this year, considering the absentees involved in that squad at the moment. Colin O'Riordan, I suppose, heading down to Australia, that's obviously a no-brainer for him.
You'd scratch that one off.
Yeah, I mean, Stephen O'Brien, I spoke to him a couple of times last year. He was phenomenal for Tipperary. He won a Player of the Month award. You know, really good guy. Was phenomenal in their under-21 run to the All-Ireland final as well. Disappointing that he's not played with football this year, and obviously he went with the Hurlers. You know, he would have been a huge player for them this year. So I know a few guys went on J1s to the States as well.
Yeah, three of them just before the championship. You know, that's another...
Yeah, I mean, it's an issue for some club teams as well. I think if guys are going to the States, you really should be letting your manager know early on, because if a manager is putting in so much effort into sort of January, February, March, April, giving you a lot of game time, you know, trying to develop you, encourage you, and then all of a sudden, sort of last minute that you're heading off, it does make life a lot more difficult, and it can affect the morale and sort of spirit within the squad as well, you know.
Yeah, Conan, you're our Derry expert here. You know, it's a team that's turned a corner. A lot of criticism nationally and locally after the Tyrone game, but like, Tyrone are a very good team, and they've come back with three solid wins, you know, since.
Yeah, Tyrone are a very good team. Of course they are. I mean, Peter Hurt's the best player I've ever seen. But I think that a lot of the criticism there came from the fact that this is like the fifth year in a row that Derry just sort of sleepwalked into one of these ties. I mean, they knew what Tyrone were going to bring. They've done it against Donegal. They did it against Longford 1 year. And they just continue to not be prepared for these.
It was their third or fourth time playing Tyrone this year as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, actually, they played them in the UEFA Cup. They played them twice in the McKenna Cup, once in the league. So it was their fifth time playing Tyrone, if you count the UEFA Cup, which is in December. But and they never won any game, but they seem to get worse in every game as well. But there's a bit of momentum there now. And actually, you know, Derry have a lot of good teams in the past. Like, a lot of really... You look back now and you really kick yourself thinking, how on earth did we not win anything apart from a couple of leagues? But this is a team now where it's sort of devoid of superstars. There's no one big player. Mark Lynch maybe to an extent, but there's none of those... Like, they had genuine quality, like world-class quality. Like Peter Hart quality.
Yeah, the one thing I like about them there is that I think they've got no momentum. You're absolutely right in what you're saying, but in Damien Barton, I thought it was great to see. It was fantastic to see Damien Barton and Tony Scullin rolling on the ground with delight and passion. I mean, I thought it was an absolutely brilliant photo. But it just goes to show that the passion that they're transferring into this Derry team, it just goes to show that the way they've come back in their games and the way they've come back against Cavan. You know, they played with the last 10, 15 minutes, they're really, really motored into it, like, you know. So they're really beginning to gain momentum, if that's the word, the buzzword to be using. But jeepers, I think they're playing with a bit more than they've got a bit more than momentum, because one of the things I did notice was that they brought on Neil Turner, Owen Bradley and McGoldrick. Jesus, I'll tell you, they're good players to be bringing on from the bench.
Yeah, and Endolin is very good as well off the bench.
It's actually Bradley looks pretty good, but it's actually Emmett Bradley from Glenn Mahara. But really good, no, he's really good midfielder, though, so you're actually right to sort of get excited about it.
Yeah, and that full forward line of Keelt, McGuckian and Lynch, like, I mean, I know Lynch and Keelt drift out a little bit, but that full forward line has everything. You know, you've got long range scoring, you've got direct running, you know, you've got a bit of strength under a high ball, you've got a lot of kind of different dynamics going on in there.
Yeah, like, it's a good team, it's a good running team, and they have been playing sort of zonally and trying to get men back in defence, and it sort of suits them more as they're attacking, rather than, they look a bit confused still defensively. I mean, against Meath, they were 7 points down at half time, so they just went man for man, and it sort of changed everything. Like, but once they start going at teams, and John mentioned the Turner there, I remember getting whipped off after 20 minutes at a club match one day. Niall Turner absolutely strung me up. He had me on toast. I was feigning injury, like anything to try and make it look a bit better. But and this lad was only 17 at the time, but like, it was a bad experience that day.
Like, it is scandalous that they haven't put in better performances in Ulster over the last 20 years. You know, no one, I think, Ulster final and no Ulster title in so many years. I think the thing that's hampered them, obviously, is that they haven't had their best players available to them, which makes life very difficult for a manager coming in if, you know, some guys aren't playing with the squad for whatever reason.
Yeah, just now that we have you, Conan, why is that? Because the impression we often have down here is that club football is so heated and there's such hatred up the rivalries that transfers to county, and that's why some of the players don't commit. Like, you know, is there any truth to that?
I mean, the club championship's great. It's really competitive, and you often hear reports of, like, you know, people maybe falling out in training. Like, this is very isolated reports, but I think it's a very easy sort of lazy way sort of out for Derry, and I know some of the players don't agree with it, and they do, like, a lot of them get on really well, like, and I don't think it's that big of a deal. I think there's just this general apathy in the whole county, people who don't even play as well, just towards the county team itself, like, you know, I don't
negativity around the squad,
it's like,
or
they
the
don't
team,
care. Yeah. I think nearly the supporters like the club championship more, so there's no real sort of unity in the whole county trying to drive the whole
thing.
If you
don't
forward.
Go in, you're not criticised. You're almost, you know.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. And people actually, I wrote a piece about Mayo supporters last week on the website, and it's just how great they were. Like, they were 6 points down, and everyone was just roaring for them, like, just trying to get them over the line. And not once did they turn on the players. But if that was Derry, like, you know, people would be threatening the players into playing better. They'd be chatting about club matches in the stand. They just don't seem to be engaged fully with the county team. Like, so I wouldn't say that that's the reason, but I'd say just this whole apathy around, like, the last 20 years. I think it's going to take another bandwagon to get the whole thing united again. It's going to take an Ulster Championship to get fans and club people all sort of geared towards the county, because it isn't. It's far from it at the moment.
Mark Lynch is a player, like, obviously a key player for them, you know, and it's good for him to see the county getting back, you know, into late July and possibly into another in quarter final. I mean, he's been there probably 10 years at this stage. I remember marking him the last time Derry got to an All-Ireland quarter-final in 2007, he was wing forward. And, like, for someone like him, he probably could have easily stepped away from the squad over the last 3 to 4 years. Now, he was a key player for them getting to the Division 1 final a couple of years ago. And, you know, he's obviously stepped up as one of the leaders and one of the main guys. And it's up to other guys like James Kilt and all this, you know, to try and follow him. And
you're spot on there, Barry, because for the simple reason, I thought when Mark Lynch was sent off, or black-carded, I think it was, the last day, he says, well, that's Derry done and dusted. By God, they went on without him. So, you know, it just goes to show what I'm thinking. I just get this feel about Derry at the moment. Not that they're world beaters, but I'm not saying that for one moment. But I just get a feel that there's a little bit of a sting coming into them. There's a little bit of passion coming into them. There's a little bit of coordination. And you know what? Anytime you have Keelton, Mark Lynch, and Colin Bradley on a team, you know, you have shooters. And shooters are a strange breed, like, you know, a bit like Brogan and we were talking about earlier, like, you know, they can tap over a few points from long distance, the same as Sean Kavanagh did, you know, and can change a game very, very easily, and it can lift. I just think that that Derry are beginning to put a few things together, and, you know, who worries about the supporter if you get far enough in it, like, you know, the supporters will come out eventually.
Yeah, John, what about Tipperary? You know, they're going to be facing a different animal at the weekend. Derry will play with a couple of sweepers maybe and play a counter-attacking game. Something Tipperary don't, you know, they don't come across as often down in Munster.
Well, yeah, firstly, with Tipperary, you've got the Kevin O'Halloran, Michael Quinlivan and Conor Sweeney there. They're three excellent players. And in Brian Fox and Josh Keane and Philip Austin, you've guys with great pace, and they're creators. And I think they've found two good guys. Bill Maher, who I coached and trained for the All-Ireland Minor Final, and Jimmy Feehan are after coming in. Bill Maher is after joining the football, and he's a big plus. He's a smashing footballer. He's in at wing back there, and Jimmy Feehan has shown against Kerry, I was really impressed with him, a real cut and thrust about him.
Yeah.
You know, there's, and you throw in Peter Atchison into the middle of that, and I think actually that Breffni Park will suit Tipperary, you know. What I saw of Derry, it was very, very brief now, I must say. I didn't think they were as blanket defence as other teams, but maybe I could be wrong there. But they seemed to go with a direct ball a lot of the time now. Whether I'm right on that or not, I stand corrected. But I just think that Tipperary have dangerous forwards and have been putting up some really good scores too, like, you know. So.
Yeah, Conan, you were saying Derry are actually moved away from the real defensive. They're still play with a sweeper, but they're not as defensive as maybe they were.
That's what I thought as well.
Yeah, I mean, like, they had McCaig and Danny Heaven nearly as out and out sweepers, the two of them. But now they have moved away from that. McCaig is still a bit of a sweeper. That's sort of based on what all our teams are doing. But it looks like the players are enjoying themselves a bit more. It's a lot simpler when they're just pushing up on their men.
That's what I got as well, Colin. I think you're hitting the nail on the head. The players are enjoying it.
Yeah, that's nearly the talk around football now. It seems to be, can players not enjoy playing a defensive game? I'm sure Tyrone enjoyed last weekend.
Yeah, that's true. But I suppose the big thing for Derry is the fact that they have three wins under their belt over the last 5 weeks. So that's obviously enjoyable when you're winning matches, you know. Possible difficulty for Tipperary going in at the weekend is they haven't played in 3 weeks. It actually feels a bit longer since that Munster final. But and they didn't know who their opposition was up until recently as well. You know, I think ideally from an inter-county player's point of view, you'd like to play either every week or every second week. You know, that 3 week, 4 week, 5 week break, you know, it does drag on a small bit, and you can end up having a few training sessions that are just below par, and, you know, the attitude or the spirit isn't quite there. Whereas from Derry's point of view, they're bouncing along week on week, you know, mad to co-training, I'm sure. Training actually won't be that difficult because you're playing week on week as well, which is another benefit. It's probably shooting drills or tweaking different tactics and systems and stuff like that. So certainly the momentum is with Derry going into the weekend.
Yeah, all right, lads. We'll finish up with predictions here. Conan, we'll start with you. Derry are 1-2, Tipperary 11-5. It's a home tie for Derry, as we all know.
What did you think of that? I mean, I got so paranoid about that, I started looking at Google Maps, and I went as far down as Clonmel, which is on the Waterford border, 3 hours, 4 minutes to Cavan, where Port Stewart, where a lot of the Coleraine lads and Derry would live. 2 hours, 47 minutes. I feel like I need to get that out there, but
yeah.
I know they are more familiar with Breffni Park, but the travel thing, I'm not having. Anyway, Derry are going to win.
Okay, Barry.
Yeah, I think momentum is key for this one. You know, it'd be great for Tipperary if they did manage to get to an All-Ireland quarter-final, but I just think the momentum over the last 6 weeks, and, you know, they'll be bouncing into the game at the weekend. I think they'll win by a couple of points.
John?
Yeah, what do you call it? I agree with the lads that the momentum is with Derry. One little thing, though, I think that Liam Cairns will have 3 weeks to work on the lads, and he'll have improved them on a few areas that they certainly needed improvement from the Kerry game. 3 weeks, my heart has to guide me that I'll go for stick with Tipperary by a point.
Fair play to you. I'll go with Derry because I went for outsiders last week and I got absolutely cleaned out of it. So my confidence is shot this week. So I'm going to go for Derry at 1-2. All right. Hope you all know we have a hurling show as well.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I should go. And so
we're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today. Because like, I'm heartbroken.
All right, the qualifier I'm going to this weekend is the one in Pierce Park between Roscommon and Clare. I'm delighted to say we have Mayo legend Liam McHale, who's a selector and a coach with Roscommon, on the line. Liam, Roscommon are the 20th team to face a six-day turnaround. Only three of the previous 19 have won. That's a damning statistic you're facing into.
It is, yeah, especially with the way we played Cullum on last Sunday. You know, we were very competitive in the first game in Salt Hill in bad conditions. Not so good the last day. Ended up getting beaten heavily. Gave away two really bad goals in the first half. You know, I felt that we shouldn't have given away those goals. Our positioning was very bad. We couldn't have defended those two goals worse in the first half. And instead of being 3 points down, maybe at halftime we were nine. And against a very decent goal side, you're going to be always chasing the game after that. So you haven't got much time to address things. You know, those mistakes, you can only gloss over them. You go over a few other little bits and pieces. You get one good workout in, Cullum, and then you have to travel to Salt Hill again on Saturday.
Yeah, because that's the thing, and you get one session in, but physically the lads are probably going to be back to normal. You know, they've got 6 days. They'll be close enough to normal. It's psychologically trying to lift the lads. You know, how have you been going about doing that?
Well, that's the big thing, I think. You know, fellas that are in such good shape at this time of the year, I don't think their physical fatigue is the major thing. It's mental fatigue. And what we try to put across to the lads is that, barred the few really, really drastic errors, especially the two defensive errors in the first half for the goals, we would have been a lot closer to Galway and the game would have been a lot more competitive. Because, you know, when you get beaten heavily by a team that you're probably expected to win, it's very hard to come back from that. So we showed some clips of mistakes that we made defensively that cost us heavily goal-wise, and tried to explain to the boys that if we can sort these things out, that we should be okay and be very competitive against Clare on Saturday.
All right, so that's the kind of positive message you're trying to get through to them, you know, because they are a young team and the concern there is that their confidence might be shot after such a, you know, one-sided result.
Definitely. That was a concern because we were beaten badly. But when you break down the game, Cullum, and you look at some of the mistakes we made, if we could have cut out those four or five mistakes, it would have been a much better game. You know, even if you're conceding points instead of conceding those two goals in the first half, you're still in the game at half time. And we've addressed that. We said, we tried to impress across on the boys that we're really a team. We've done well in the league. You know, we're decent in the championship, and we're capable of playing a lot better than we did last Sunday. But we have to, you know, tighten up on a few things, and we should be okay. You know.
Yeah. Are you burnt out, Liam? You know, and I know this from experience. And it's maybe not always physically again, but psychologically, you know, you're trying to lift them so much for every league game. You're taking every game so seriously that by the time the championship comes around, you know, Roscommon in the championship have lost the spark that they had.
Well, definitely, we put a big effort into the league. I think that was well publicised. But we don't regret that, Cullum. We had no choice. We didn't want to. We didn't want to get relegated. We feel that the way forward and the way to win and be competitive in Connacht is to be playing Division 1. You know, it took the lads 4 years of major effort going from Division 4 to Division 1. And, you know, there's no point, we felt, getting there and then going down straight away. You know, you see what happened to Down and the negative effect it had on those guys. So we were delighted that we're in Division 1, and we're delighted to be looking forward to Division 1 next year. But the league has taken its toll. We had like seven big championship matches, then we had another big game against Kerry where we got well beaten in the semi-finals. But some of our key players that had been playing well all year didn't play well last Sunday or the previous Sunday. So that is a big concern for us. We've given them as much downtime as we can. But again, as you mentioned earlier, is this mental fatigue as opposed to as opposed to physical fatigue, because you know you play eight big Division One league match against the powers of the country, you know, the top eight teams in the country, and then you play three or four championship matches, and you play a Connacht final replay against a very good Galway side. It's going to take its toll on young lads that haven't been used to playing at that level. So that is a major concern. I guess we haven't picked a team yet. Now we're talking about we're going to try and freshen things up a little bit, bring some energy into the side, and hopefully those guys will enthuse the whole group, and that would be in good shape mentally and physically for Saturday evening's game.
Yeah, Monaghan actually did that. They completely freshened up their team with five new players, and you know, I don't want to scare you. It didn't work too well for them, but it's just so difficult. That's it. That 6 day turnaround, as we know. Just on the difference between the drawn game and the second game, Liam, you kind of changed it tactically, and you went away with the full. You did away with the full time sweeper, and you pushed up on kickouts, and Galway went long with their kickouts and kind of dominated the midfield section. So nothing seems to be working.
Well, you see, again, we didn't play well in the first half, but if you study the tape, the two goals we gave away were just very, very bad defensive errors. You know, on the first one, a long kick from the Galway keeper, long out of his hands kick from the Galway keeper. There was, I think it was John McManus went to break it. We had four defenders on the wrong side of their man for the breaking ball. Nobody was communicating, and the four of them were ball watching. So, you know, you just don't get away with that. I think Brannigan won the break, gave it to Cummins. His defender was on the wrong side of him. He took a solo and stuck it in the back of the net. Now, that's unforgivable stuff.
Yeah.
And the second goal was Sice went by Fintan Craig. I thought Young Lully or Young Murray should have come to help. Make an extra pass, seeking to force a turnover, and we didn't do that. So even though we pushed up on the kickouts and we tried to be aggressive and tried to win the game as opposed not to lose the game, those two mistakes in particular really, really hurt us. And, you know, they're a very decent team. They're very good midfielders, some very good forwards. So when you're 9 points down or something like that at halftime, it's going to be a very, very difficult ask. And, you know, the boys did try hard in the second half, but we were always going to be able to keep us at bay then with the kind of way they're set up defensively, you know?
Yeah, you were actually wide open in defence in that first half, you know, in comparison to the week before. Like, I mean, Sice's goal, you rarely see goals like that in the modern game, you know. Usually players are doubled up on. There was no goal on whatsoever when he got the ball out by the sideline. It's rare you see a player, and especially Sice is so left-footed. Like, there were so many mistakes defensively in that goal. Yeah. Like, you know, show him onto his weaker foot. That wasn't even done. There was no doubling up. It was, you know, it was almost like a comedy of errors for that Sice goal.
Well, we pushed him to the wrong side. But when he was pushed to the wrong side, we had two young players that could have helped in that situation. You know, they were marking very dangerous players, and they decided not to help. You know, we would have went over this before. But, you know, they made the decision. But, like, again, we've talked about that during the week, and we continue to talk about it and try and sort that stuff out. Young fellas make those mistakes, I guess. The first goal then was the same thing. Four guys ball watching, nobody in the man, three guys in the wrong position. You know, ball breaks and it's stuck in the back of the net. So, you know, we're not gonna win big championship matches like that, you know, playing that way, especially defensively. But having said that, you know, we're in the process of addressing those things, and I'd be very, very confident that that sort of thing isn't going to happen on Saturday night, because if it does, and the Carl O'Connors and the Gordon Kellys and the Gary Brennans get on the end of those balls, it's going to be the same result. So, you know, you can't be too critical of these lads. They're putting a big effort this year, Cullum. You know, we've trained harder than 90% of the teams in the country, and, you know, young fellas are going to make mistakes, and it's our job to try and eradicate those mistakes as quickly as possible and make sure that hopefully they don't happen again on Saturday.
Yeah, I want to read a passage from Jim McGuinness's piece in the Irish Times to you there from last week. And he said, "I watched Galway and Roscommon on Sunday afternoon in complete dismay." This was after the drawn Connacht final. "It was like a vision of the game in the near future when it may be in ruins. Either it's not in the Roscommon or Galway DNA to play this way, or else the coaching strengths of the respective managers are not suited to this type of system." You know, there's pretty strong criticism of the way you set up in that first drawn match.
Oh, yeah, and we did play a sweeper, but Galway played two sweepers, Cullum, and we couldn't break them down. You know, we played very lateral. We didn't move when we passed the ball, and
does that type of system suit Roscommon? I suppose you went away from it and went more attacking the second day. That didn't work, so it's hard to know.
Well, it did. Look at this. We were very competitive in the drawing game. But having said that, Galway had us by 2 points going into injury time, and probably should have they probably should have won the game. But we showed great heart and came back and got 2 very good points. The sweeper does make it tighter. It's not like that's not like rocket science. You know, we play 5 versus 6 up front and play 7 versus 6 at the back. You know, everybody, like most teams, are doing that. So we said we do that because of the Cummins threat. And you know, we didn't do that the second day, and we saw what happened. But yeah. even though Cummins hurt us a lot, and Comer, you know, they're obviously very formidable players, and Comer in particular is very, very difficult to defend when you have only one man on him. But I still believe it was our defensive errors and our bad positioning that cost us the first 2 goals, which really hurt us in the end of the game, you know.
That's interesting, though. You said you went 5 forwards. Like, you know, I was at the game. There was an awful lot more forwards back than 5, you know, at a lot of times during the game. Some of the times you'd only 2 forwards up there. And trying to get to the bottom of this, is this a case of your forwards tracking, attacking defenders, and, you know, they're not supposed to be back there? Or is that actually the system? You wanted to leave 5 forwards up, but just how the game transpired, they weren't able to stay up there.
With the breeze, it looked really bad at times in the first half when we had everybody behind the ball, but we couldn't break them down. They kind of had a wall across 60 metres out from their own goal. We turned the ball over, and then it was like a scamper to get back, you know, and fellas were just chasing back just to try and cover up the gaps that we had left, because we had 5 or 6 guys. You know when you're playing these sweepers and these defensive systems that kind of invite you on, and your half-back line gets pulled up the field, your midfield gets pulled up the field, and when you lose the ball, then you have no shape and everybody is chasing back. And
yeah,
that's what happened to us, very much like the Dublin Donegal game semi-finals a couple of years ago, you know, which, you know, where you just lose your shape completely, and then you're racing back. And the reason that happens is because you kind of penetrate their defense and get shots off on goal and make the keeper kick the ball out again. And you know, that happens in the first half.
It's classic counter-attacking tactics.
Yeah, and you see, you got to try and keep your shape, but you would always need to keep, you know, 4 defenders back and you know, not get sucked up into the play. You know, you need to keep some balance defensively, and we didn't do that. And then when you lose the ball off a kick pass or off a hand pass, especially a lateral hand pass, then it's just like a chariot race, everybody trying to get back, and fellas just lose their shape, and you know, you end up then with no forwards up the other end, you know, and then you're in big trouble because you have no shape, everything has gone frantic, you know, and you need to get them in at half time and hope the damage, you know, that the scoreline isn't too severe, where you can make adjustments, get them in properly and get them playing the way you want them to play, and then you can get back into the game.
Yeah, obviously Clare on Saturday evening, I'm actually travelling to that game, so I think it's going to be a cracker. You'll know a lot of the Clare players very well. You were a coach down there up until 2012 for 3 years, I think. Similar to Galway, Liam, they're going to have a really good midfield, so that's a little conundrum that you're going to have to solve, whether to allow them go to those 2 fetchers or not.
Yeah, I was looking at the program now, and I think there's 11 or 12 guys still there. You know, the goalkeeper, the full back line, Gordon Kelly at centre back, the 2 midfielders, and 2 of the forwards are still playing. There's 2 or 3 fellas coming off the bench, and like Roscommon, they'll be a year behind, but like Roscommon, they've been making massive progress. When the first year I was down there, they were Division 4, you know, and Gary Brennan is one of the best midfielders in the country, maybe if not the best. You know, he is everything. He is pace, he is size, he is athleticism, he's 2-footed, he's unselfish, he is work rate.
Yeah.
And, you know, he overshadows Kyle O'Connor, and I know he won't be upset when I say this, but Kyle O'Connor is as good a young midfielder as you get. He's absolutely fearless. He goes for every ball that's kicked out. He can score from distance as well. He's 2-footed as well. So they're as good a midfield partnership as you get. So that's going to be another big ask for us, you know. And I was happy with young Compton. Young Compton is a young lad that has, you know, had some good years with the under-21s. And we in Roscommon, we're very high, and we feel he can be a very good player. He's only coming back from injury, but he got another 45, 50 minutes in him last Sunday, and I thought he played well both days. You know, he worked very, very hard against a real good midfield in Flynn in Conroy, so we'd be hoping that he'd be able to match up with one of the boys, and then it'd be Niall Daly or David Keenan or somebody else that'd be matching up with Carl. So we know we have a job on our hands there, but you know, you have David Tuberty inside, you have Podge if he starts, Podge Collins, you know, you have a lot of good players, and I'd be very familiar with them. And to be honest with you, Colm, I'm delighted that they're going so well, but for the first time in about 4 or 5 years, I won't be shouting to them on Saturday evening.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you won't. Listen, best of luck, Liam. I'll see you on Saturday after the game.
Yeah, best of luck to you, Colm. Take care, man.
All right, lads, if anybody knows Clare, it's Liam McHale. You know, he's saying that many, he knows that many players that are still involved from when he was there, and that little bit of inside knowledge might kind of pull Roscommon through. But that 6 day turnaround, you know, how do you it happened to me once actually with Laois when Westmeath beat us after a replay back in 2004. And this is why I'm of the opinion, physically I felt fine, but I just wasn't fine. Like, we're all convincing ourselves we're fine. Tyrone hammered us. It was a brilliant Tyrone team, but like 3 of the 19 have won up until today. It has to be psychological.
Absolutely psychological. I suppose, you know, how you lose that game as well does affect your mentality going into it. You know, if it's a tight game or you maybe are heavy underdogs going into the game and give a good performance, then your morale is still at a high level going into the backdoor game. But I mean, Roscommon would have put so much energy into those two games against Galway, really would have fancied their chances in winning them. So it's going to be really difficult, that 6 day turnaround. When the draw was made Monday morning, I think Roscommon should have met on Monday evening. I don't know, I think they mightn't have met till Tuesday or Wednesday, I'm not sure. But, you know, if they got together on Monday night, I think they could have discussed the Galway replay. They could have maybe went through a few issues about the game and then actually just park it and then focus on the draw and the fact that you have Clare this weekend and try and move forward and look forward to a new game. Because, you know, at the start of the year, if you said to Roscommon that you had to beat Clare to get to an All-Ireland quarter-final, they definitely would have taken it, you know. So
yeah,
you got to park that disappointment, look at the bigger picture and just sort of zone in and say the next 5 or 6 days, we got to get ourselves as mentally right as possible. Because on the pitch itself, you're not going to do a huge amount, you know, a couple of maybe 30, 40 minute kick arounds, that's about it. But this is where, I suppose, the senior members of the panel, the management as well, they really, you know, earn their salt type of thing and trying to get the players right and trying to ensure that they're mentally tuned in for Saturday.
Yeah, John, like Liam said there, you know, they're being really positive this week. They're trying to tell the players that, you know, without those one or two goals at halftime, it wasn't that bad. They were just bad defensive mistakes. And for a young team like that, you know them so closely. How badly will that have affected them?
Yeah, of course it will affect them, and because they have a lot of pride in themselves as well. The one thing that is going for Roscommon, I feel, and it's a very, very, the management have a difficult job in trying to get it right over in 6 days after a bit of a thumping. But the one thing they have going for them is that they have excellent players that can come in. And straight off, I'm just thinking of, Alton Harney, Inda Smith, and Cian Connolly, and Donny Shine, you know, Cahill Shine, Kevin Higgins. There's about 6 or 7 players that were nearly right for the Galway game, and they're excellent players. They certainly, I think, will come into the game. I have a feeling they will, because they have the... They have the ability, number one. Now, they may not have the fitness, but they won't be as scarred as the 15 guys that were out there. And you'd be hoping that maybe those 6 or 7 players coming in will be able to give sufficient lift, because there is no doubt about it. Barry is absolutely 100% right. This is psychological. It is everything in the 6 day turnaround is all about psychological. And you'll be talking about days of redemption and redeeming yourself. You know, you're still hurting. You're still pain. The pain is going straight through you, because, look, your neighbours and friends and the club and the county, you know, you feel you've left them down and trying to get all that out of the system within 5 days, and then say, wake up on the 6th day and say, yeah, I'm ready to go playing a fourth round championship game it's just a bridge too far. But in Fergal and Kevin, I think they'll do a good job with them. I think they're, you know, Fergal in particular is experienced and has been through the mill before, and I think that he may get he may get them into the right frame of mind. But they have the talent. They certainly have the talent. And those seven or eight guys that can come in, they'll also be proving one other little small thing, that we were good enough. They'll be trying to prove it to the management that we were good enough to go in and play against Galway, and why didn't you give us the chance? So on that couple of little finer points, you'd give them a good chance, if not a great chance.
John, how is the mood around the camp when it comes to when you're in the qualifiers and you're out of Connacht? I know a few years ago in Derry, some of the lads in the squad would have told you that they called themselves a dirty dozen, because once they got put out of Ulster, there was only like 12 people training anymore. Boys get injured, people just went back to their clubs. There was just, again, that word apathy around the place.
Yeah, I'll tell you straight as last year when we lost, we met the following morning, and not for a big session or anything like that, no, but we decided we'd meet the following morning, and we spoke about what had just happened, and we left everybody to a man there, and it was about getting it out of the system, but we had 2 weeks, and we went on to play Cavan, and we were really flying, and we won the game by 10 or 11 points. But the point I'm trying to make is that it's about trying to get that out of the system, and 6 days is very, very short to do it.
Yeah, Barry, what do you think? Do you think the management are tactically confused a little bit? Because from one game, the first game, where they conceded kickouts, they played very defensively, and that's against Galway. We haven't changed teams for the second day, and they pushed up on kickouts, you know, and they left their defence very exposed. So it's not like they're changing their tactics for a new challenge. You know, they completely ripped up the script in the space of a week.
Yeah, I suppose they shipped a lot of criticism in terms of their tactics on the first day. Obviously, the wind had a huge factor the first day as well. It wasn't as prominent, I think, for the replay. But, you know, we discussed it before, you know, teams really should have at least two systems in place that they can fall back on, and depending on the opposition or the stage of the game or even the elements, you can apply it. So I think they're just maybe being caught between two stools now after going with one system the first day and then a different one the second day. And then the other thing, I suppose, the players, you know, went back training in November and put a huge focus on the league. You know, they haven't been playing as well as they'd like over the last sort of 2 to 3 months.
Yeah.
Apart from maybe the second half against Sligo, they lost their last three league games, and you know they had the New York game, etc. But you know, form isn't great at the moment for them. But John is right. Like, on paper, the ability is still there. You know, that's not gone out the window or anything like that. They still have a team and a squad that's well good enough to win this game. Physically, they still should be okay. You know, intercounty players should be able to play three games in 3 weeks back to back. So it's all about the mental side of things and psychology element of it. But yeah, certain tactically it will come into play a lot this week. Obviously, they'll be doing a lot of homework on Clare as well to see how they're set up. But you know, if you're going out to play a big game like this and there's any confusion around your system, you know, things can fall apart very quickly. You know, you need that certainty and that confidence in the system that you have in your play, and then players can actually perform on top of that then.
Yeah, John, what system suits these lads the best?
Suits Roscommon?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I suppose there's a new management in place that after putting a new system in place. So, look, I prefer not to comment on that. But what I would see very, very obvious to me anyway is that, Galway had a powerful midfield.
Yeah.
This Clare team has a powerful midfield.
Yeah.
So, look, without... I'm 30-something years in the game. If you don't win midfield, you're going to put yourself... You have a serious chance of losing the game. So... I think they have to do something about midfield. That's the first thing. The second thing is that their backs have been ripped open. So look, they have a serious worry with that, and maybe they're playing a system that the management, to be fair to them, haven't had enough time to tweak it to make it a lot better than what it is. So. Look, Clare will be coming with a spring in their step, and you know, I went on about the what's his name there earlier, Damien Barton and Tony Scullion, but this Colm Collins, I'll tell you something, he's done some act. When nobody would take over Clare 2 years ago, is it 3 years ago now, he stepped into the breach, and he's brought that little bit of what Barton has brought to Derry. He's brought that little bit of pride, not little bit, huge pride. that he's from Clare, his sons are playing, his sons are willing to sacrifice. You know, there was that sort of identity coming into Clare, and he's talking back about the time when Clare made the breakthrough. That's the Colm Collins you're dealing with. Quiet guy, says nothing to nobody. But by God, when I'd say inside in that dressing room, there's a bit of steel in Collins.
Yeah, and when you bring in a really professional setup in a county like Clare, you know, players immediately respond to it. You know, they see that it's moving in the right direction. When you talk about Clare, we always hear Gary Brennan and Tuberty, you know, David Tuberty. That's the two names that are always thrown out there. But you look at the players they brought on the last day against Sligo. Caelan Sexton, who's only 19, he's new on the team this year. He was outstanding against Limerick, a really good player. Shane McGrath, who I don't understand.
Thomas Davis.
How is he not on the team?
I know, he only got a few minutes the last day. Yeah. I've marked him in league and club championship, and he is a handful,
and
you know.
Attacking midfielder, yeah, or a wing forward.
He's a sort of Graham Riley type, a sort of snake of half hour.
loves scores.
Loves to get the scores, you know. So and Pat Burke as well, another guy, you know, who was on the Dublin panel for a couple of years. Really good guy, good player. So yeah, they do have options coming off the bench, and that could be important depending on Podge Collins' role. You know, on Saturday, obviously, is the hurling game. On the Sunday, it was a flip side a couple of weeks ago, whereby, you know, he started for the hurlers and he came on for the footballers. So it'll be interesting to see if he gets the full 70-75 minutes. Obviously the manager will be keen to do that, but I'm not too sure sort of the conversations himself with the Davy Fitz and we'll have this week.
Well, Davy's in hospital, so maybe he'll get away with it.
There's two other things that stick out there about Clare, is that number one is that they're putting up big scores. They're putting up 217 against Sligo, 17 points against Kerry, and I was inside watching it now, and they got a horrible start. Two goals, game looked over. They dug themselves out of a hole. They dug themselves out of a hole against Sligo, and then a huge hole against Laois. And the last thing is, they're going into their fifth game, lads. Fifth game.
Yeah.
Look, these boys have been tried and tested. If my memory is right, I don't think they started the sixth and the last day. Maybe they didn't.
No, they didn't. He came on early for the black card. With
that's
Colin
right. Collins. That's three right. Points, that's yeah. right. That's right.
And they had a really good league as well. You know, getting promoted out of Division 3 was, you know, the ambition, and then beating Clare and Croke Park, or Kildare and Croke Park, was huge as well. So certainly, you know, talk about momentum, but they've really had it for the last 3 months.
Yeah, they play. I saw them against Limerick. They play an attacking style of football as well. You know, they don't drop that many forwards back. A little bit when the ball is coming back, you know, like a Kerry or a Dublin, but there's no full time sweepers or anything like that. So you'd be expecting this one to be a really open, good game of football, because I think Roscommon want to play that kind of way too. So when they're up against a team that plays attacking, I can see Roscommon, you know, continuing on with an attacking style of play. Predictions, lads, before we finish up. Conan.
Clare.
Ooh, controversial. Barry.
I'm going to go Roscommon.
Roscommon. John.
Again, I'm going to go with Roscommon.
John, you're letting your heart overrule. You're a big softy here.
I am, yeah. I have to. I put 3 years into Roscommon and five years into Tipperary. So I'm not going to renege on them. You know, you can take the men out of the bog, but you can't take the bog out of the men. Like, you know.
Yeah, fair enough. Roscommon are 8-13, so they're favourites. Clare 7-4 outsiders. I'm going to go with Clare just because, listen, lads, the stats don't lie and the turnover is really, really difficult. Confidence for a young team might be a bit shot, maybe potentially a little bit of, you know, lack of confidence in their system, all that adding up. Clare, the word momentum, which we all love, but it does make a bit of a difference. So I'm going to go for Clare in that one.
And Gary Brennan, who's
the,
Gary
the
Brennan,
only good thing, so Colm, is that you've picked all the wrong ones last week.
Oh, you have to be guaranteed Roscommon are going to win now, John.
All right, okay.
Just one thing we mentioned there about the passion of the management, you know, being transferred into the players. I think that can be something that's very much understated, you know. I think it does have a real role in teams up and down the country. And actually, going back to 2010, we actually played John's Tipperary in the qualifiers. We were after getting hammered by Meath, and we had huge, you know, morale and spirit issues at the time. And we managed to get over Tipperary. They were actually very competitive that day. But John came into our dressing room and gave a really good speech in Croke Park afterwards, saying about belief and passion for your county and that type of stuff. And lads were really taken back by it. And when he headed out the door, lads were actually saying we should get him into our squad because we were at an all-time low at the time, you know. And John... Yeah, it was a wet night, a Saturday night in Croke Park. But it was something actually that stuck a chord with a lot of players in the Dublin dressing room that time. So
that's a nice compliment, John.
Thanks very much, Barry. You know,
no,
I look after you sometime
anytime
above there.
So you're taking responsibility for the All Ireland, five All Irelands in 3 years, John.
No, look, there'll be very interesting, very hard games to call now, to be quite honest with you, I suppose, you know, so I wish them all the best. And, you know, it's my first time actually talking about Roscommon, because so many guys had been onto me media there over the last few months on Roscommon, and I just thought, to be fair to Fergal and Kevin, that I wouldn't comment on it. But I think now when they're out of Connacht, I'd just like to see them kick on. You know, there's some very good young players there, and obviously they're soul destroyed at the moment, like, you know.
You're just waiting for the call from Wooly.
Yeah, okay.
You're waiting for the GAA hour to give you a ring, the GAA football show, John. All right, listen, that's all we have time for this week. Thanks to Conan, thanks to Barry, thanks to John, who are their special guest on the phone. Also thanks to Mikey, Dion and Evan for putting the show together. So don't forget to follow us on Twitter @sportsjoe_GAA and subscribe to us on iTunes. We are top of the iTunes charts, we want to draw your attention to, so search for the GAA hour and keep us up there. All right, see you next week. Good luck.
Yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.